Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
It's June the 11th. We are in Parshas Acharemos on page 644, starting Perek Zayin, chapter 17. Bottom of the page. Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Daber el Aaron ve'el banav. Speak to Aaron and to his sons, ve'el kol b'nei Yisrael, and to all the Jews. V'amarta aleim, you shall say to them, Zeh hadavar asher tziva Hashem lemar. This is the thing that Hashem commanded, saying, Ish ish mi beis Yisrael asher yishchat shor o chesev o eiz b'machaneh. Each man from the Jews who will slaughter a bull or a sheep or a goat in the camp, meaning outside the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash, but in the camp, or slaughter it outside the camp. We are discussing here a bull, a sheep, or a goat that is a karban, that someone chooses to slaughter instead of in the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan, rather outside. He did not bring it to the entrance of the Ohel Moed of the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash. Lakriv karban laHashem, to offer a karban to Hashem. Lifnei Mishkan Hashem, before the Mishkan of Hashem. Dam yechashev lo ishahu dam shafach. The blood of the animal will be considered for that person spilled blood, which Rashi says means it'll be tantamount to murder, as if he spilled the blood of a human being. And this person will be cut off, and he will get the punishment of kares from among his nation, from the midst of his nation. This is the avera that is known as shchutei chutz. Shchutei chutz means to take a karban, and rather than slaughter it in the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan, but slaughter it outside. That's shchutei chutz. So the Jews will bring their sacrifices, that they slaughter on the face of the field, which means that they do these sacrifices outside the Beis HaMikdash. We don't want that to happen. So in order that the Jews should bring those karbanos, and they'll bring them to Hashem, El Pesach Ohel Moed, to the entrance of the Ohel Moed, El HaKohen, to the Kohen, Vizavchu zivchei shlamim laHashem osam. And they will slaughter them as sacrifices of peace offerings to Hashem. This halacha is not only limited to shlamim, to peace offerings, but that is the example the Torah is using. Vizarak haKohen es hadam al mizbach Hashem. The Kohen will throw the blood on the altar of Hashem. Pesach Ohel Moed, at the entrance of the Ohel Moed. V'iktira chelev, and he shall burn the fats, L'reach nichoach laHashem, as a pleasant smell to Hashem. V'lo yizbechu odes zivcheihem, they will no longer slaughter their sacrifices. L'si'irim asherhim zonim achareihem, to the si'irim that they are attracted to, that they go to. In the English it says to
demons.
That sounds mysterious. To the demons that they stray. Chukas olam tiyazos lahem ledorosam. This is a statute forever for them, for all generations. That is the mitzvah of shchutei chutz. I want to read a little bit further. V'alehem tomar, and upon them you shall say, Ish ish mi beis Yisrael, each man from the Jewish people, umin agera she'agor b'socha, a man, any convert that lives among you, among them, arshayale ola o zavach, that will bring up an ola, burnt offering, or zavach, or another kind of karban, v'al pesach o amoyin lo yivienu, does not bring it to the entrance of the ol moyin, la'asoso la'Hashem, to do it for Hashem, v'nichras ho'yishahu me'amav, that man will be cut off from his nation. Now that sounds repetitive, because we just mentioned the sin of offering a karban outside the Beis HaMikdash, and here it seems to repeat it. But the difference is that before we were talking about the avera of slaughtering the karban outside the Beis HaMikdash, here it is the avera of taking the limbs and burning them, offering them outside the Beis HaMikdash. So it's two different averos, shchutei chutz, which is to slaughter the carbon outside the Beis HaMikdash, and then also haktara, to burn the fats, the limbs, whatever is supposed to be burned of the carbon, to do that outside of the Beis HaMikdash is a different avera, but it's two different averos. Each one, the punishment is kares, which is pretty severe, and they are put together over here in the Torah. The fact that the punishment is kares means that it's a pretty bad sin, number one. Number two, the fact that the Torah compares shchutei chutz, slaughtering outside the Beis HaMikdash, to murder, that the blood will be considered dam shafach, spilled blood, tantamount to murder, that also means it's pretty severe. So it is something which we have to understand. It sounds a little bit it seems a little bit over the top that this should be such a terrible punishment for this sin. What is this sin exactly? A person has an animal. Now, if the person does not make this animal into a karbon, then the person can slaughter it wherever they wish. In fact, a non-karbon animal that is slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash is also an avera. That's called chulin ba'azara. That's a non-sanctified animal being slaughtered in the Beis HaMikdash is also bad. We'll learn about that later. So here, this is an animal that has been made into a carbon. A person has already pronounced upon this animal the status of a carbon. He said, this animal shall be a shlamim, an ola, a chatas, whatever it is that he's calling the animal. Then, rather than bringing it to the Beis HaMikdash, he opts to slaughter it outside the Beis HaMikdash. He does it in his backyard. And he slaughters it, and then he takes the appropriate fats or limbs and burns them either on an altar or elsewhere. He burns these things. So that's two separate averos. The avera of shchutei chutz and also haktara, slaughtering and burning outside the Beis HaMikdash of a carbon. When a person has a bama, has a private altar, a private altar is only permitted at certain times. Prior to the construction of the Mishkan, a bama was acceptable. We find that the avos, that Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov offered sacrifices. There was no Beis HaMikdash, there was no Mishkan. They were able to do so. With the construction of the Mishkan, then one could not use a bama, could not use their own personal altar. And later, after the Mishkan came Shiloh. During the time of Shiloh, also a bama was prohibited. After Shiloh was destroyed, then the place of the Mizbeach, of the altar, was moved first to Nov, and after the destruction of Nov, it was moved to Givon. During those times, then it was permitted to use a personal altar. And then, once the Beis HaMikdash was built, then personal altars, a bama, is prohibited. And that remains until today. Even after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, a bama, a personal altar, is prohibited. One who uses a personal bama for a carbon that should go into the Beis HaMikdash is in violation of these prohibitions. So, using a bama is a big problem because you have two different violations, both of which are kares. In Eretz Yisrael, we find throughout the Nevi'im, after the Beis HaMikdash was built in the time of Shlomo HaMelech, we find that certain sins are repetitive, that different generations seem to do the same sins over and over again. In the northern kingdom of Yisrael, which was the kingdom that was not as Torah observant, you find that the sin of Avodah Zarah is perpetuated. And it's a big problem in the northern kingdom. In the southern kingdom, which is the kingdom of Yehuda, and the line of David HaMelech, there, much of the time they kept the Torah very well. When they slipped, often the problem was that people would use a bama, that they did not take their karbonos to the Beis HaMikdash. We, who do not offer sacrifices, and in fact, we don't even have the natural drive to offer a karbon, which we'll talk about in a moment, it's hard for us to relate to the Yetzer Hara, to the evil inclination that pushes a person to offer a karbon outside the Beis HaMikdash. If you're bringing a karbon already, take it to the Beis HaMikdash. What are you doing it outside the Beis HaMikdash for? Is it such a drive that a person needs to do it outside the Beis HaMikdash? But we don't appreciate the drive because we don't appreciate what it means to want to bring a karbon. We know that when the world was created, Hashem created the world with an ingrained Yetzer Hara, an evil inclination. We're very familiar with the Yetzer Hara. We all struggle with the Yetzer Hara in many, many ways all the time. From the beginning of the world and on until the time of the Anshei Knesset Hagadol, of the men of the Great Assembly, the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash, there was a great desire to worship Avodah Zarah, to worship idolatry, paganism. That was a great drive in a person. It was a difficult thing to stop oneself from doing. We don't appreciate that because we don't have that drive. And the reason we don't have that drive is because in the time of the Anshei Knesset HaGedolos, the men of the Great Assembly, they recognized that the drive was destroying people, that it was becoming too great of a temptation, and they davened and had that drive removed. And that's why we don't feel that same drive. The Gemara tells us that when one of the Amoraim, one of the sages of the Gemara, spoke disparagingly about Menashe, who was the king who perpetuated Avodah Zarah, so after he did so, Menashe appeared to him in a dream and told him that he said to him, how could you speak disparagingly about him, about me? So he told him, because you worshipped Avodah Zarah. So he told him, if you would have been alive when I lived, you would have lifted up the hem of your robe and you would have run to the nearest altar to offer a karbon to Avodah Zarah. The drive was so powerful. None of us would have been spared. It's difficult for us to picture it, but we have to understand that we're much weaker than they were. And if we lived at that time, we would be running to grab the nearest animal we could get our hands on and take it to an altar and slaughter it, take the blood and throw it on the altar, take the limbs and burn it on the altar. We would have a tremendous drive to do that. That was something that people wanted to do. Picture the drives that people have today that we know and we accept, and to superimpose this drive on top of that. First of all, it's very informative because it shows you that these drives are really empty. Because we look at it and we say, it means nothing to us anymore because we don't have the drive anymore. So the things that we do have a drive for, to think that really it's just as empty as the other one, it's just that we haven't gotten rid of that one yet. It's still within us. But there was an innate drive to do it. So to bring a karbon to Hashem is already a great step in the right direction. It's not to Avodah Zarah, it's to Hashem. But it's not in the Beis HaMikdash, it's in one's own backyard. Now, what would be that drive? Why would a person bring a karbon? They're not worshipping Avodah Zarah, they're not worshipping idols, but why would a person, if they're worshipping Hashem, why would they bring the karbon outside the Beis HaMikdash? If you're going to worship Hashem, don't you want to do it the way Hashem says to do it? Which is in the Beis HaMikdash. Why in one's backyard? What's the drive to do that?
It'd be a long way to walk to.
Okay. Okay. It might be a long way to go. So it's quicker. I don't have to wait so long. So that could be. That could be. It could be the drive is that I don't want to have to wait. I don't want to have to delay. It could be weeks or months before I get to Yerushalayim. Here I can right away offer the karban. So I don't want to wait.
People like to feel a sense of power. So when they go to what Hashem wants, they're ceding that power. But when they do what they want, they feel more powerful.
I want to do it my way. I want to do it my way.
Myself and not have the Kohen do it.
I want to do it myself. I don't want a Kohen to do it. So even though the person is offering a carbon to Hashem, there could be these other things that get in the way, and they offer it the wrong way, which is in their backyard, rather than in the Beis HaMikdash. So we're not talking about Avodah Zarah, which is a terrible crime, where a person is rejecting Hashem completely, talking about offering a carbon to Hashem, but on my own terms. This would be similar to a person who goes to Daven. Well, if you're going to Daven already, that means you're recognizing that we are dependent on Hashem, and we have to ask of Him our needs. That's why we go to Daven, right? But a person goes to Davening, and then at Davening behaves or makes his davening in a way that he wants to, rather than the way that the Torah says to do it. The person says, I don't like that way of doing it. I want to do it this way. It's not so far from what happens. People go to shul and they may ignore what the halacha says is the proper way to daven. But I understand, you're coming to daven because you're saying, I recognize that Hashem is in charge, and I want to ask Him for something. Don't you want to do that the way Hashem says to do it? But we have a hard time giving up our autonomy. We have a hard time. The rabbi says, don't talk during the repetition of the Shemona Esrei. And the person talks. But you're at davening. Doesn't davening recognize that Hashem is the king and Hashem is in charge, and we are in His hands and we need to ask Him for our needs? So if He says, don't talk during Chazaras Hashatz, during the repetition, don't we want to listen to that? Well, no, I don't want to listen to that because I want to talk. So we contradict ourselves. Here we're going to pray to Him, which is acknowledging His supremacy, and then at the same time we don't listen to Him. So that's we human beings do that all the time. And that's what this Avera is. Yeah.
In that thing, you know, just it bothers me, like when the Torah reading, people chat, they daven.
Same thing.
And, you know, it's like they want to make up the davening, but when the Torah is being read, so how did you daven? And somebody said, well, you know, between, you know, and I'm going, but you can't possibly see the whole.
Yeah. So there are different rules about that. Really, between a person could, as long as they stop when the Torah is being read, but it is difficult to do it that way. Right. So, but we do contradict ourselves. We do, we acknowledge Hashem's presence, but on my own terms. So, that is really what's happening over here, is that the person does not want to give up the convenience, the power, the ability to do it themselves, autonomy, and the person doesn't want to give that up, even though they're bringing a carbon to Hashem. Now, I want to show you one of the most fascinating things over here. The Pasuk says, we just read it, in Pasuk Zion, verse 7, we should no longer offer the carbonos to the demons. Now, Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech haolam shehakol nivra. Again, we're not talking here about Avodah Zarah. We're talking about offering a carbon to Hashem, but in the wrong place. So the Torah is comparing that to a person who is worshiping the demons, whatever that means. Now, what are these demons? What is that? So, we don't really know. Shadim, demons, we don't really know what they are. We do know that they exist. There is some sort of a creature called a shade. A shade is a demon. It's hard to translate it because demon in everybody's mind conjures up some picture of something you've seen, which is for sure not what we mean by the word shade. We've talked about Shadim before. Noach took them on the Teva, on the ark with him, because they would have been destroyed otherwise. A shade, the Gemara tells us, is similar to human beings in some ways, and similar to angels in other ways. They fly, for example. In that way, they're like angels. They also eat and drink like people. Shadim are kind of a hybrid between people and angels. So, the offering of these karbonos to the Shadim really is another way of saying of offering it to a pagan belief rather than to Hashem. That's what it's similar to. You'll recall that we just finished the discussion of Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur, we have a discussion of the Kohen Gadol's performance in the Beis HaMikdash. As part of that performance, we have something which, as we learned before, is a chok, is something which we don't understand, and something which we just have to accept as that's what Hashem wants us to do. And that is to take a goat and push the goat off the cliff. The Sayer La'azazel. The goat for Azazel. Which appears to be a pagan practice, as we talked about a few weeks ago, but it is not, and Hashem tells us to do it. So, if you look back at Pasuk, back on page 638, Pasuk Ches, verse 8, it says, V'nasan Aharon al shnei ha'seirim go ralos. Let me just check one thing over here. Hold on. Okay, I'm sorry, Pasuk Zion, verse 7. V'lokaches shnei ha'seirim, he will take the two goats, V'amido sam lifnei Hashem, Pesach ha'amoid, and he will place them in front of Hashem at the entrance of the Olamoid. And Asan Aharon al shnei ha'seirim go ralos. Aharon will place on the two seirim, on the two goats, go ralos, lotteries, tickets. Go ralos l'chod la'Hashem, v'go ralos l'chod la'Azazel. One lot is for Hashem, and the other one is for Azazel. And it goes on from there. The Ibn Ezra over here says something very cryptic, and it's not unusual for the Ibn Ezra to say something cryptic. The Ibn Ezra says that the Azazel is a very difficult thing to understand. It's got a lot of hidden meaning. And he says the secret of the Azazel, of the goat for Azazel, you will come to know when you are 33 years old. So that leads to a discussion, of course. What does that mean? So I have to thank Mr. Rich Levin, who was playing in his car a recording from Rabbi Rosner in Eretz Yisrael, who gave the following explanation, which he had read somewhere. I don't know who he got it from. But he gave the following explanation. He said, if you count 33 psukim from here, from this pasuk, from pasuk ches, from verse 8 on page 638, in Perek Tezayin, chapter 16, let's count 33 psukim. So this chapter has 34 psukim minus 8, that is 26, plus 7 more will give us 33. So the seventh pasuk of Perek Yud Zayin of chapter 17 is the pasuk that we just read. For lo yizbichu odes ziv chayhem, they will no longer slaughter their karbanos la seirim, as we translate to the demons, to the goats, la seirim asherhem zonim achareim, that they stray after them. So what does that mean? So, when, of course, we're not going to get a full understanding here, but according to this, the Ibn Ezra is linking these two statements in the Torah, which is not a wild thing to say since they follow each other. After Yom Kippur, we have this commandment of Shchutei Chutz, of slaughter, not to slaughter outside the Beis HaMikdash. So it seems they are related to each other. What happens on Yom Kippur? You take two perfectly good goats, both of which could be a carbon for Hashem. In fact, as we learned, they have to look the same, cost the same, everything has to be the same about them. And we put lotteries on them, lots. And we choose one for Hashem and one for Azazel. So one is perfect, it goes to Hashem. The other one does not. Where does it go? It's taken out to the wilderness and it is pushed off the cliff. It is not a carbon. It is not a sacrifice. It is pushed off the cliff and destroyed. What does it represent? Well, it could very well, at least in part, represent the carbon that a person is taking and wants to offer someplace other than in the Beis HaMikdash. They take a perfectly good animal, which is perfectly good for a carbon, which could have been a carbon, and they take it out of the Beis HaMikdash. And they don't offer it in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Torah says, I don't want you to slaughter it. Push it off the cliff. Don't offer it as a carbon. Just as the Torah then says, there is a prohibition against taking a carbon and offering it outside the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah could be saying that on Yom Kippur we are going to symbolically show that we are rejecting the notion of offering a carbon outside the Beis HaMikdash. Because we're going to take an animal that could have been a carbon outside the Beis HaMikdash, and we're not going to offer it as a carbon. Instead, we're going to push it off the cliff. It's going to meet its end without being offered as a carbon. It's almost as if, obviously, the way you reject offering a carbon outside the Beis HaMikdash is by offering carbon inside the Beis HaMikdash. But the other way to reject it is that you have this animal that you're about to imagine. Think of a person who is standing with his animal, and he has this drive to offer a carbon, but I'm not going to offer it to Avodah Zarah. I'm going to offer it to Hashem, but I don't want to go to take it to the Beis HaMikdash. I have a drive to do it right here, right now, by myself, with my involvement, not a Kohen. I'm going to do it right here in my backyard. And he's got the knife, and he's got the animal, and he's really ready to do it. And he says, no, I'm not going to violate the Torah. And he throws down the knife, and he smashes the animal on the rock. And he doesn't do the Avera. He avoids the Avera. That's almost, you can almost feel that in what's happening on Yom Kippur. You're taking that animal and saying, no, we are not going to offer it as a carbon. We're going to throw it off the cliff. We're not offering it as a carbon. We're not going down that road. Carbonos are for the Beis HaMikdash. They are not for outside the Beis HaMikdash. It seems that's what the Ibn Ezra is linking over here between these two parashas, these two stories in the Torah, these two commandments in the Torah. The fact that on Yom Kippur we're dealing with goats, and the fact that the demons have the same word, Sa'ir, Sa'irim, which also means goats, that also seems to link the two together. Now, why is the term for a demon a Sa'ir? I don't have a good answer for that. The Gemara does say in one place, maybe more than one place, that there are certain types of shadim, of demons, that look like goats. But I don't know why that would be true. That just begs the question. I don't know what the relationship is between the two things. But it is a fascinating link to between the pasuk of the two goats of Yom Kippur and here about not offering a carbon outside the Beis HaMikdash. Yes.
What does this have to do with Mount Seir? Anything?
No, I'm sure it has a lot to do with it.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know the answer. I mean, that's Edom. That's Esav. I'm sure it has everything to do with it.
One more quick question. When they daven for the drive for Avodah Zarah to disappear, did it disappear just among the Jewish? Did they ask for it to disappear just among the Jewish people or in the world?
No, it disappeared in the whole world. The Gemara says, so then how come there still are non-Jews who worship pagans? And the Gemara says, Minhag avo sehem biyadehem. They're just doing what their ancestors did. That it no longer has the same drive and the same meaning to them as it did before. They're just perpetuating that which has been done for centuries. That's all that it is. but it's not the same thing as before.
Okay. There's still so much of it.
Yeah. There's still so much of it. It's not what it was before. You have to picture a $1 billion industry devoted to this. Because we have $1 billion industries devoted to other types of averos.
Is there anything true about it in that it's tapping into forces of too much? I mean, is there anything really going on there?
Yeah, there certainly could be. There are forces of Tumah. The mistake is to think that those forces of Tumah are somehow separate from Hashem. They're not. Hashem is in control of everything. But Hashem does create forces of Tumah as well, which could be tapped into. There is such a thing.
So what they're doing could be evil as well as foolish.
Yeah. Okay. But today, probably not. Today, it's probably just foolish. Because nobody's really got it anymore.
Yeah. I understand that the Parah Adumah is not a Korban, but what is its status?
The Parah Adumah? Yes, there are rules attached to the Parah Adumah. We're going to get to it. It's in Parshas Chukas, so we'll get to it, Mirtzah Hashem. Well, maybe
a
year from now. We'll get to it, maybe sooner than that. We'll get to it, Mirtzah Hashem. But it is not a Korban. It is not a Korban. And It is a method of becoming tahar. That's really what it is. It's sort of like a...
Why wasn't it done in the Beis Hamikdash?
Oh, why wasn't... Because it's not a carbon. The question is, why wasn't it a carbon? That's really the... Right?
Okay.
That's the issue. Yeah. That's a good question. I'm not sure. I'm not sure why the Torah didn't make it into a carbon, which is a good question.
If we did make it into a carbon, how would we collect the ashes and do all the rest?
Yeah. Okay. So then it would have to be a carbon that could be used. It would be one of these kind of. I really meant to emphasize this before. The drive for Avodah Zarah is also the drive to offer an animal as a carbon. We don't have that drive to offer an animal as a carbon to Hashem either. We just don't have that drive anymore. The need to take something live and give it over, so to speak, to Hashem, or, God forbid, to a false god, that was a very powerful drive. A person had a drive to give up their own life, to give of themselves, to subjugate themselves, to subordinate themselves to a higher purpose. That was the drive a person had. The higher purpose, though, was often not Hashem. It was a fake higher purpose. But there was a drive a person had. And if a person's not going to slaughter themselves or their child, which happened, if that's not what they're going to do, they're going to take the next highest life form, which is an animal, and slaughter that animal for Hashem, or God forbid, for Avodah Zarah. That was the drive. That was removed by the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. That's why we don't feel it today. We don't have that drive. And today, as we've mentioned many times, the Yetzer Hara is not to subjugate myself to a false god, God forbid, but rather the Yetzer Hara is not to subjugate myself. Today, the battle is not, should I worship Hashem, or God forbid, a false god, but rather the battle is, should I worship Hashem or not worship? That's the battle. The battle is it me or is it God? Mm-hmm. That's the battle. Rather than, is it God or is it the moon? It's a different type of battle than it was before the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah took away the drive for Avodah Zarah.
Is this drive expected to come back in the time?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. I don't know the answer to that question. It would seem to me that it would come back, but I don't know. The reason why it seems to me it would come back is because when that drive doesn't exist, then the drive to serve Hashem also is diminished. And when they took away the drive for Avodah Zarah, that corresponds to when prophecy ended. There was no longer any Nevuah. The existing prophets died out and then there were no new ones. So it would seem to me that those two things are linked together. That in order to be able to achieve the highest levels of prophecy, one needs this drive. Mm-hmm. It was there for a reason. It wasn't there to hurt people. Hashem put it in a person because it had good also. It had good and bad. Like any drive. Every drive has its positives and negatives. Yeah.
Well, Havdil, please forgive me for bringing it up, but as you're talking, I keep thinking about all of the terrorists and ISIS and so on who want to sacrifice their lives.
Right, they want to give up themselves.
It sounds
right?
Similar to what you're describing in some ways.
But here's the difference. They're only willing to do it because they are being promised great physical pleasures if they would do it.
But some women are doing it.
Right, well, they're also being promised. In different ways. Or that were help to their families, here, whatever it is, but they're being promised. They're not doing it so that they can connect to God. That's not what's driving them, right? Here it was to connect to God, or what they pictured as God, right? And that was the thing. So back on page 646, Pasuk Yod, verse 10. Now, once we bring up this issue of sacrificing, and sacrificing outside of the Beis HaMikdash, so we segue into another, again, something which is hard for us to really appreciate, but another type of drive. V'ish ish mi Beis Yisrael, u'min ager agar besocham, each man from the Jewish people and from the converts, asher yochal kol dam, that will eat any blood. V'nasati, fanai b'nefesh ha'ochel eses hadam, I will put my face against the person who eats the blood, and I will cut off that person from the midst of its nation. So the Aveira, the sin of eating blood, is also kares, is also to be cut off in the Jewish people. Blood here means blood of an animal. Blood of an animal. Not blood of a person, but blood of an animal. Ki nefesh habasar ba'dam hi, because the soul of the animal is in the blood. And I have given it to you on the altar to atone for your souls. For it is blood, and it will atone for the soul. Therefore I said to the Jewish people, every soul among you shall not eat blood. And the convert that dwells among you shall not eat blood. So we're not allowed to eat blood. So one who eats blood, the soul of the animal is in the blood, and there is a specific prohibition against eating blood. Now the blood is the main source of atonement with a carbon. The main part of the carbon is the blood. As we know, the four primary avodos, the four primary services of a carbon is slaughtering, one, catching the blood, two, carrying the blood to the altar, three, and then throwing or placing the blood on the altar, that's four. That's the main part of the carbon. In fact, if a carbon's blood work is done properly, even if the rest of it is not done properly, nobody eats the meat like they're supposed to, the limbs, the fats are not burned like they're supposed to be, nothing else is done right, only the blood is done properly, nevertheless, atonement is achieved. The blood is the main part of the atonement. Why is that? The blood represents the soul of the animal. That's where the soul resides, whatever that means. The soul is not physical. But the soul resides in the blood. And when the blood is placed on the altar, that is where the symbolism is complete, that I have given over an animal that represents my life to Hashem, by taking the blood of the animal and placing it on the altar. It's like my life, as represented by the blood of the animal, is being put on the altar. We're not allowed to eat blood, even from a kosher animal that is slaughtered properly. One is not allowed to eat blood, and it is from here. This is the prohibition right here. We're not allowed to eat blood, and because the blood represents the soul of the animal. As you know, this is why kosher meat has to be salted, because it is the only way, I shouldn't say that, it is one of two ways of removing the blood from the animal in order to eat it. The other way to remove the blood is through roasting, but if you don't want to roast your meat, if you want to boil your meat or eat it any other way, then the only way to get the blood at first is by salting. So those are the two ways of getting out blood, is by roasting the meat or by salting the meat. And this leads to many, many requirements in how meat is prepared. Besides the proper slaughter of the animal, there are many, many things that have to go on in order for the meat to be kosher and prepared properly. So perhaps we'll have a chance to go through some of those rules. As we know, we like to segue into some of the halachos, and we'll hopefully have a chance to do that. But here, the main point is that the blood represents the soul, the life of the animal, and by extension, the life of the person offering the karban. Blood is prohibited from a non-karban also. But since blood is the way that Hashem allows us to achieve atonement with a karban, therefore blood of all animals is prohibited. Now, as I mentioned, blood of a person is not prohibited from the Torah. Blood of a person is only prohibited midrabbanan, it's rabbinic in nature. So if a person is bleeding, a person's hand, they get a cut and they're bleeding, one should not put the cut in their mouth, because then they would be getting the blood, their own blood, into their mouths, which is not prohibited from the Torah, but it is prohibited rabbinically. One should not do that. Blood in the mouth, a person has a cut in their mouth or something like that, or surgery or whatever is in their mouth, that is permitted. The rabbis never prohibited blood that originates inside the mouth. But blood from outside the mouth should not be placed in the mouth, because there is a rabbinic prohibition, but it is only rabbinic. The Torah rule is only about animal blood. Question?
Transfusions.
Yeah.
They're okay.
They're not eating it.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. That's not an issue at all. Giving blood, receiving blood, that's all fine.
If the soul of the person is in the blood.
Yeah, yeah. So it doesn't mean that a person is. I mean, we give blood and we're still alive. Right, so where is my soul in the blood, or is it right? So it's obviously still within me, but the it is a representation of where the soul resides. So the Ramban actually writes that one who eats the blood of an animal is attaching themselves to an animal, because we eat the meat of an animal, right? We eat meat, so that's not considered attaching ourselves to an animal, but eating the blood is, so to speak, attaching oneself, because it's the life of the animal that we're attaching ourselves to. So
everything should be well done.
Everything should. So the truth is, when you bring home meat from kosher meat from the store, even though there is red on the meat, and if you don't cook it well, there will be red in the meat, that red is not halakhically dumb. It's not blood halakhically. It is a residue, obviously, but it is not halakhically blood. I do not know scientifically or medically what the difference is, but, I mean, it looks different. It does not look like regular blood. If you look at regular blood, look at that. Even though it looks very red, person cuts a piece of chicken that it is not well done, and it looks like red. Oh my gosh, am I eating blood? If you look at real blood, it does not look like what that chicken looks like. But it's kind of scary. But it's kosher. It's 100% kosher. It's not what the Torah is prohibiting. Again, hopefully we'll have a chance to go through some of those rules. I don't think we'll get to it tonight, but hopefully we'll have a chance. I do want to finish the paragraph, though, before we end tonight. So, on 648, Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, V'ish ish mi b'nei Yisrael miragera gar b'selcham, and each man from the Jewish people and from the comrades who live among them, asher yatsud tzeid chaya o'of asher yayachel, that will capture a hunted wild animal or bird that is edible, meaning kosher. Vishafaches damo, and he will spill its blood because he will slaughter it. Vichisahu be'afar, he must cover it in dirt. This is the mitzvah of kisui hadam, covering the blood. So another rule about blood, that if one slaughters a kosher wild animal, like a deer is a wild animal that is kosher, or a kosher bird, a chicken, the halacha is that the blood has to be covered. Pasuk Gedal, verse 14, Ki nefesh kol basar damo v'nafsho, for the soul of every creature, its blood is in it. Its soul is in its blood. Damo v'nafsho hu. V'omar li v'nei Yisrael, and I said to the Jewish people, Dam kol basar lo sochelu, you shall not eat the blood of any creature. Ki nefesh kol basar damo hi, for the soul of every creature is its blood. Kol lo chlav yikares, anybody who eats it shall be cut off. So it's really, that was already said, it's a repetition of the prohibition of eating blood, but now we have an application that the Torah is saying because there is a prohibition against eating the blood, therefore the blood of a chaya, of a wild animal, or the blood of a bird needs to be covered.
Why?
Okay, so the blood of a domesticated animal, of a cow, a sheep, or a goat, does not need to be covered. So in a slaughterhouse, if you go to a slaughterhouse where they're slaughtering sheep or goats or cows, there is no mitzvah of covering the blood. The blood is simply runs into a trough and it drains away. That's it. Nothing happens halachically to that blood. But if you go to a slaughterhouse in which they're slaughtering chickens, they have to cover the blood. And if they do deer or something like that, then also they would have to cover the blood. So the Torah is saying over here, why cover the blood? Because since the blood is the soul of the animal, therefore it should be covered. So if that's so, why not cover the blood of the cows and the sheep and the goats? So which way is it? Should we cover or not cover? So the Ramban writes that since the blood of the cows and the sheep and the goats are offered on the altar, they are kosher animals that go on the Mizbeach. Wild animals, even kosher ones, are not brought as carbons. You can't bring a deer as a carbon. You can only bring a cow, sheep, or a goat. So because they are offered on the Mizbeach, therefore that blood should not be covered, even in a non-carbon animal. Because since that blood does ultimately, in a carbon animal, go on the Mizbeach, it need not be covered when it is slaughtered as a non-carbon. But the blood of a wild animal, or the blood of, which never goes on the Mizbeach, or the blood of birds, which even though there are birds that go on the Mizbeach, but they are very few, most birds are not brought on the Mizbeach. Therefore, the blood of birds has to be covered. What it seems like is happening over here is this. The Torah is saying, blood is the soul. It's inappropriate to simply spill the blood and leave it there. It's not the way you treat the soul. You cover it. That's what you do. But the blood of a sheep, cow, or goat, which is offered on the Mizbeach, that has an elevated status. Therefore, it need not be covered at any time. It's not considered to be something which you have to put out of sight. But the blood of the chaya, of the wild animal, the blood of the birds, a person may be tempted to eat that blood. We just got off past the prohibition of eating the blood. One may not eat blood. And now I slaughter the animal, and there's blood on the floor, or blood on the pail, or whatever it is, and a person may be tempted to eat the blood. So cover it, so that temptation is removed. Now, is it really a temptation to eat blood? Is that really the case? So there is a debate amongst the Tanaim, amongst the sages of the Mishnah, whether Jews historically had a desire to eat blood. One says, you see from here, the Jews had a desire to eat blood, because otherwise, what are we worried about? But the other one says, no, there never was a desire to eat blood. Blood is most, it's disgusting. Nobody really wants to eat it. But you see, if the Torah is willing to reward us for abstaining from eating blood, which anyway we find disgusting, imagine the reward for abstaining from lashon hara, from illicit relationships, from other people's money. Imagine the reward we get for things that we do have a desire to do wrong, and we abstain and we don't do anything wrong. Imagine that reward. So that's a discussion which is had. When we get to, we'll have a repeat of this in Parashas Kedoshim, in the next parasha, and hopefully we'll have a little bit of a broader discussion about the idea of abstention from blood. But here you have, so far, really three mitzvos involving blood. Don't slaughter the animal outside the Beis HaMikdash. Two is don't eat blood. And three is cover the blood of a chaya, of a wild animal, or an oaf, or a bird that is slaughtered outside the Beis HaMikdash. Again, there are rules involved over here in the covering of the blood. This is a mitzvah which I had never done until very recently, last summer, when we had a presentation on salting and broiling meat. So in preparation for that, Rabbi Grossman, one of the kollel rabbis, who is a shochet, so he slaughtered the chickens that we were going to use for the presentation. So when he did that, so the blood had to be covered. and he honored me with that mitzvah. Since he had done it before, I'd never done it before, and I very much appreciate him giving me the opportunity to do that mitzvah of kisui hadam, of covering the blood.
How did you do it? Do you mind?
So he had brought the kisui hadam. There are rules of what you can use and what you can't use. It has to be a type of dirt that is
absorbent.
Well, it has to be broken up. You can't take a slab of something and just put it on top.
Okay.
You can't just cover it with
crumbly.
It's going to crumble. You're right. So they had brought like
a crumbly dirt,
right, in a bag. Uh-huh. And after he slaughtered the chicken, and so there was blood on the ground, which there's dirt underneath it. There's blood on top, and then to take this and you make a bracha and you put it on top.
Really, what bracha do you make?
It's Asher Kedshem Zavazano. Is it lechasos dam ba'afar? I believe that's what it is. I think I'm saying it a little bit wrong. It's the cover blood in dirt.
And then you do it just so you cannot see the blood anymore?
You don't have to do all of it. You don't have to do all of it.
It's a token, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
How many buffers became vegetarians after that?
You know what? It was amazing to me how many people came to watch. It was voluntary. We didn't, you know, the presentation, we did things separately. We did the slaughtering during the day. And we announced, anybody wants to come watch. And then at night we did the salting and broiling. Salting and broiling is not, that's not repulsive. But this, right, we thought people would be scared. There were many people that came, many women came,
yeah,
and many kids came.
Wow.
We were surprised, very surprised.
Wow.
And then they did it for Tamima.
Yeah, and then we did it for Tamima also, that's right.
You do it once a year? Are you going to do it again?
No, we had studied the laws of broiling and salting last year,
yeah,
so we made the presentation last summer. That's it. Right. Okay. All right, I'm going to read what this the last pasuk over here. Just so we have it, we finish the paragraph, but we're going to go back to this Mirz Hashem next week. V'chol nefesh asher tochal nevela utula, two psukim. V'chol nefesh asher tochal nevela utrefa, and he saw that we'll eat a nevela, and a nevela is an animal that was not slaughtered properly, killed but not slaughtered properly, utrefa. Trefa is an animal that was slaughtered properly, but there is an internal, not blemish, but an internal defect in the animal that renders it a trefa. For example, a hole in the lung, or a hole in the heart, or something like that. Boezrach uvager, in the ezrach means the Jewish people, and the ger is the converts. So if someone eats those things, v'chibes begadav, the Torah here is not addressing the fact that it is not kosher. The Torah is addressing the fact that it makes a person tamei. He needs to immerse his clothing, and he needs to also immerse himself, and he is tamei until evening, and then he becomes tahar. This pasuk needs to be explained because we are not talking here about all types of nevela and trefa. So we will cover this Mirza Shem next week. One more pasuk. If he does not wash, neither his clothing nor his body, he will carry his sin. Meaning, if he then does something he's not supposed to do when he is tamei, like going to the Beis Hamikdash, then he will carry his sin. We will cover this Mirza Hashem next week. Also, we'll go back, discuss some of the rules of kashering with salt and covering blood and those things next week, Mirza Hashem. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.